one man will refuse to abandon his standards for action. All April long, Apocalypse Video is celebrating the best of high-flying, show-stopping thrills from the 90s.
Sir, pull up! You got him on your tail!
Get him off my tail!
Everything from Air Force One to Con Air.
How the hell did this happen? How the hell did they get Air Force One?
Political thrillers to skydiving escapades.
Go for the tires!
Fuck the tires! I'm going for the pilot!
All the action you could want from the decade that excelled in lighting up the skies. On the final episode of Airpool, Charlie Sheen plays Ditch Brody, a womanizing, daredevil skydiver who becomes embroiled in a plot by former KGB agents to steal $600 million in gold designed to save Russia from total economic collapse in the 1994 convoluted mess, Terminal Velocity. Strap in and hold on for the ride of your life, as Apocalypse Video brings you Airpool.
We used to joke about it, didn't we? About some student hitting the dirt and digging in like Wile E. Coyote. I don't think we'll be joking about it anymore.
It's like a great high, right?
Let me guess. First time?
What happened, man? How'd she get away from you?
I hooked her in! Like I've done thousands of times!
Here to determine whether manslaughter charges should be brought against you and Chris Morrow's death.
You're kidding.
What are you buzzing me for?
What took you so long?
Are you certain this is the same woman who was in the plane with you?
I just want you to see that she's come back from the dead.
You have 5 seconds to tell me where the cylinder is. One!
You gotta be kidding me!
Two! Four!
What happened to three?
Shoot!
That's broken!
The safety's on, you idiot!
You swallowed the worm.
I was trying to swallow all sorts of things.
Careful, I may just have to marry you.
What is going on here?
Why don't you tell me who you are? For real.
Thousands of people will die!
She's one of two things, covert agent or a complete raving lunatic.
What are you willing to stick your neck out for, huh?
Pack the bags. We're going on a guilt trip.
Get out of my car! Relax and enjoy your flight.
Before we lift off for our final flight in Airpool, I would just like to ask you, Mike, would you like a certs?
What is going on here?
What is going on here?
Which is a quote from Dave, the movie. I'll be your host and captain for this final flight in Apocalypse Video's Airpool. I'm joined again by my fellow co-pilot, Michael.
I have two other quotes. All of my quotes are from Charlie Sheen. What is going on here was one. What's Russian for ass? And I'll also have, so I'm the bad guy, right?
Oh, all right, pack your bags, folks. We're going on a guilt trip. That was like, to me, the way he delivered that, I'm like, he has said that line before in real life.
Yeah.
You want to believe it's a lie, don't you? Because then you don't have to do anything, right?
Pack the bags. We're going on a guilt trip.
I could see him, if he hadn't said it before then, he's said it since this movie. He was like, yes, oh, I'm going to remember that one.
I also really enjoyed the line, the whole idea of having a testicular shield and Sheen referring to it as a coffee tron dick protector. And herein lies the thing why I think this is a superior film to Drop Zone. Drop Zone, you know, it didn't
should we say like why we're comparing this to Drop Zone? Like this I didn't realize that what was going on here with this and Drop Zone until we watched this.
Yeah, so this is 1994. It turns out that similar to what had happened the previous year in 1993, where you had Let me fast forward. This is similar to a movie phenomenon where two films come out in the same year that are basically the same movie.
Armageddon and Deep Impact. I think that's the most famous example of that happening, right? Or there, that's got to be like the one, right? Armageddon and Deep Impact.
I was going to say initially Tombstone and Wyatt Earp, but technically Wyatt Earp came out a year later.
Yeah.
But they're often like bundled together.
Right.
But yeah, this is one of those situations. In 1994, you have two skydiving movies, Drop Zone and Terminal Velocity, in the same year. And I got to say, we watched Drop Zone last time, and we were all pretty much like, yeah, this isn't a good movie. I would say Terminal Velocity is also not a good movie, but infinitely more entertaining.
Could not disagree more.
Wow!
What is going on here?
I think it has way more going for it. It's actually funny. It tries to go for laughs, which is something that Drop Zone, I don't think, really does.
I mean, I think they're very similar in that they have the lead almost in some ways feels like the same character, where it is like alternating. We talked about in Drop Zone how
hard disagree.
Well, we talked about in Drop Zone how Wesley Snipes is alternating between like comic relief and John Wick kind of character, right? And yeah. I think we get a little bit of that here with Charlie Sheen. I think he's alternating.
How is he John Wick?
I guess maybe he's never John Wick, but
John Wick.
He's definitely like he's comic reliefy in the same way that Wesley Snipes is, and in the same way where it's just not working, I think.
I hard disagree.
You like the comedic stylings of Charlie
Sheen?
Well,
I'm not saying the comedy works, but at least they try for comedy. I think what I like about this movie, so one previous in Drop Zone, one of the big problems we had is that, like you mentioned, like Wesley Snipes' character, he's not really consistent. He goes from like John Wick to like kind of bumbling, like skydiving. What?
Whoa!
You know what I mean? Whereas in this, I think Sheen's character is consistent the whole way through. He's introduced as this skydiving, like, you know, wild card guy that does these stunts. He's a womanizer.
You're right. He is much more consistent.
His character is more consistent, and also like when he's billed as like this stunt guy, like asshole douchebag, but when he gets into the shit and like guns start going off, he's not suddenly John Wick. He's just like, what? How does gun work? It's jammed. It's like you have the safety on, and like when he fights people, there's no like, what's the word I'm trying to search for? There's no he has no style. It's just I'm gonna lunge at the guy and just like punch him.
I think my big thing is Drop Zone is like a skydive. We're promised skydiving movies in both of these. And Drop Zone, we get so much skydiving. We get skydiving culture, and
it's literally about skydiving.
This one is like a weird film noir that has a couple skydiving scenes.
It has three big skydiving moments in it.
And that was where I was feeling the most burned. I was just like, what are we doing here? I am barely achieving terminal velocity. I got velocity once in the beginning, and we kind of get some velocity at the end. But like, I'm just like, why?
It should be skydiving every 5 minutes. Why aren't they skydiving? Like, when are they going to get to the skydiving factory?
Yeah, there's, I mean, I don't want every 5 minutes, but I want more than like two or three scenes. I want more than three scenes of skydiving in the skydiving movie. I'm sorry. It was not enough skydiving.
Well, I think that the skydiving we get, I mean, the skydiving bit is what really sets the whole mystery of this movie off. So to get into the plot, because.
Oh, please.
Okay. And we should say this movie was...
I'm going to say, too, I think this is one of the most convoluted plots of a movie we've seen.
It's not great. Yeah, this was written by David Toihi, who also wrote and created the Riddick universe.
Similarly, a little tough to follow, that movie.
So, okay, the movie opens. It's this woman driving in the Sonoran Desert. This, we should say this as Arizona guys, this is an Arizona movie.
Really quick, can I just mention just what else? So David Toihi, you know what he wrote the year after Terminal Velocity?
All right, so 95.
95.
Is it big?
It's his next movie. It's big in a manner of speaking. You certainly know about it. We've covered it on the show.
Oh, is it? Don't tell me it's Cutthroat Island.
It's not Cutthroat Island. Okay. It is a movie that I think we were a little more positive on.
Oh, is it Waterworld?
It's Waterworld.
It's Waterworld.
You wore Waterworld after this.
My boat.
Okay, I'm going to say that's tough because I enjoy Waterworld enough, but like it is kind of long and it drags at times. Because here's cards on the table, folks. Before we get into the plot, I think this is a bad movie, but it's enjoyably bad. I enjoy this movie.
Yeah, Dave has been appointed as the public defender for this movie. I'm the prosecution.
I'm the DA. I got here. I'm eating my certs.
I hate to be like the man in the chair, but this is crazy. So after Terminal Velocity, he wrote Waterworld. Any guess what he wrote the year before Terminal Velocity, 1993? Another movie we have not covered on the show, but you definitely know about it.
93. For some reason, my first instinct was to say The Net, but
I'm
going to
say I actually haven't seen this movie. It's a pile of shame movie, but I'm just going to speak out of my ass. Terminal Velocity and Waterworld might be a massive dip in quality from his 93 writing project.
Oh, who's in it? I feel
Harrison
like we're playing a blank check game.
Harrison Ford is in it.
93. The Fugitive?
The Fugitive.
Whoa!
What a wild couple years this guy had.
Wow. I mean, what a career. I mean, you write The Fugitive. What a wide variety of movies.
Every year, like 93, The Fugitive, 94, Terminal Velocity, 95, Waterworld.
Wow.
And then he was in the Riddick mines for, you know, for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Wow. What a wild career. All right, well, let me try to explain this wild plot here. So, as I said earlier, the movie opens in the Sonoran Desert. It's very dusty out. You would think we're on the Riddick planet or something.
It's a little hint of like a sorcerer or something maybe going on.
Yeah, she's following this car. Or no, this woman is like driving around. I think she's following a car, right? Or is the car following her? I think she's being followed.
Yeah.
She's being followed. She's driving
around.
Yeah, because
I think like the Russians are following her or something.
Yeah, we find out it's the Russian former KGB.
Yeah, the Russian former KGB is like somehow hiding out in Tucson for some reason.
We'll get to that. I'll get to that. All right, so the movie opens in the Sonora Desert. This lady's driving around in the dust. She comes to a stop, and suddenly she sees this big light behind her. What the hell is that? And a plane zooms over. Apparently, the landing gear, like, scrapes the top of her car as it lands. The big-ass plane lands in the middle of the desert. She's like, what the hell? And then we go to her apartment in Tucson. When she's speaking Russian to someone, she's like, they're coming for us. They know that we betrayed them or something. If you had any sense, you'd get out of here too. And then she gets killed by Shooter McGavin wearing this, I don't know if it's a wig or just really bad blonde hair coloring.
I like to think it's hair coloring. It was the 90s, you know, maybe they still had hair.
But it looks like a wig the way it's styled.
Mm-hmm. It looks like he's going to like a rave or something.
Yes, he kills her. We find out it's like, okay, so I guess she's like a secret agent or something, because she does like these kung fu moves on this guy before Shooter McGavin drowns her in an aquarium. But you're like, okay, so this Terminal Velocity movie, there's some spy shit going on. What is this? Then the air guitar comes in.
First of many electric. I love how you just described it as an air guitar.
Oh yeah. Well, I it's say that because I'm
the first of many
right
times that us watching it do air guitars as there's a which is really funny, another similarity with Drop Zone. Like, it's the same kind of vibe. Is the soundtrack to both these movies could be described as a guy with a synthesizer and then another guy standing next to them with an electric guitar. Not even really playing songs on the electric guitar so much as just every once in a while doing like,
yeah. And this is accompanying Charlie Sheen as he jumps out of a plane over downtown Phoenix. You could see America West Airlines Arena.
And, oh, so this is Phoenix, you said?
This is Phoenix. This is downtown Phoenix.
I wasn't sure if this was still Tucson or not. I wasn't able to clock the... Well,
I'm wondering if it might cut back and forth, but like... Yeah,
it might be like...
It might be a mixture.
Free Willy, where like he lives in like... an amalgamation of like a bunch of different cities in
Oregon.
That's
what I'm thinking they're probably doing here. He jumps out of a plane, he skydives, he's wearing what looks like a Viking helmet or something, and he's got like a Viking, like, I don't know, not Viking, but like.
And Charlie Sheen's character's name is Richard Ditch Brody.
He goes by Ditch Brody.
Why is he called that?
Well, he says it later in the movie. It's like, it's Richard, and then it became Rich, and then. Ditch. It like morphed from there. But here's a quick question. All right, so Charlie Sheen's character's name is Ditch Brody. Better name than Pete Nessip from Drop Zone?
You know what? I might give this one to Terminal Velocity.
There we go. All right, that's 1 point. Let me mark it. Anyway, he jumps out of the plane wearing this crazy getup. He's skydiving down. It's a low altitude drop. He's like sifting through these buildings, and he finally lands like right where he means to, in what he thinks is a bachelorette party, when in reality, it's a party for like a birthday party for like a 10-year-old girl or something. And as he lands, he pulls away his breakaway pants to reveal assless chaps that says, lick me. Or no, lick this.
Just a bachelorette party for
Bernadette's party. Bernadette is 8 years old today.
Oh.
Yeah, so we open with our hero landing on like a children's birthday party in assless chaps, and it says lick me.
Oh no, it says kiss this.
Kiss this, right. Yeah.
And then you get
bwing. Do you think this is another thing where like this is just something another ticket to Guilt Trip Town or whatever. Do you think this is another instance of something Charlie Sheen has done?
I don't know if he's a daredevil. I think his crazy stuff is more ground level. I don't know if he's jumping out of planes.
I guess I was thinking more of the assless chaps that say,
I could
kiss
see that.
This or whatever.
He came out with a memoir not too long ago. Like, there's probably some crazy shit in there. But anyway... So we find out that Charlie Sheen is a crazy guy, crazy skydiving instructor. He has like, I think this is like the 12th citation against him. And their school gets fined, and their school is now the most like, you know, cited, you know, flight instructor school in the country. So this is bad news. So she's like, I want you to do some desk work, do some, you know, crazy grunt work or whatever. Like, I'm punishing you right now. And this lady comes in, Natasha Kinski, who we've seen before, who when I first saw this movie, I did not recognize that it was Natasha Kinski.
This is
Kinski
like the very tropey, I don't mean this in a bad way, but just it's like the very tropey like noir vibe, right? Where he's not a detective, but it's like he might as well be a detective and she might as well be, you know, she's the long-legged dame who walked in, you know?
Did you recognize it as Natasha Kinski when she walks in? I say it. Did you necrotize that it was Natasha Kinski?
No. And the name doesn't...
It's the hair, right?
What else has she been in? That name sounds...
She was in Cat People. She was the Cat People.
Oh, sure. Sure.
And that would have been like 12 years before this. But like the blonde hair, like she just looks completely different. When I first saw this, I did not recognize it. And when her name was in the credits, I was like, I remember looking for her. I was like, where is he? Is that her?
No, I definitely didn't clock her as like anyone I recognized.
I don't know. She looks slightly different, even beyond the hair. Anyway, it's Natasha Kinski. She comes in and she claims that, you know what? I'm just having a crazy bit of like, I want to do something crazy. Let's skydive right now. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, only in a stupid action movie, because I don't know much about skydiving, but I'm pretty sure if you claim that you've never skydived before, that you can't do a jump by yourself. It has to be in tandem, right?
Well, I don't know about the 90s. Maybe back then it was a little more lackadaisical, but this is like, I think this is the part of the movie where I started to be like, what is this?
Like, you like caught a whiff of something, like, what is that smell?
Right. Yeah. Cause it's like, it's a very weird scene. It's like, she shows up and is like, I gotta skydive right now. And he's just like, okay, let's maybe go. Like, all right, maybe, like,
he thinks she's just some like crazy lady. Like, maybe he goes through this whole thing. Like, he's talking to his buddy. I tell you what, man, I'm gonna go take her on this experience of her life, and then leave her voicemail, and then call her back. Have a drink. Go I think home. Get back in time for Leno.
Yeah, I think Charlie Sheen character could be described as unrelentingly horny.
Yes,
and that, this is like part of that. Like, I don't know if this is like Charlie Sheen bringing this, or this is the director or whatever. And this is maybe where I should say, I told you ahead of time, I would describe Charlie Sheen's performance in this as disastrous. I think that this is something that kind of ruins the movie is him.
Really?
I just think he is not up for this role.
Well, last time when we did Drop Zone, you had said that you haven't seen too many Charlie Sheen movies, right?
No, I haven't. And I'm open to the idea of him being good in another one. But
you said you've seen Wall Street.
Yeah, I guess I have seen Wall Street, and I don't like love Wall Street, but I like it. And I don't remember like disliking him.
Well, because I feel like this performance is pretty much indicative of other similar performances he did in the 90s for movies like this.
I think there's something about him too, where he just like, he looks rough. Like I looked it up. He's like 29 when they filmed this.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He looks older than that. He's got like that, like, alcoholic, like, bloated face.
I did kind of notice that a bit watching,
like,
this.
Yeah, and it's just like it, you know, it's like it's a little bit of like shoving Captain Kirk in the girdle vibes, you know, like like with this, like, it's just they want him to be like a certain type of leading man, and I don't think he's charismatic enough or like got the physicality for it. Like he looks like, I mean, it kind of fits some of the character at the beginning, where
have that bloated face.
Yeah, he's a little washed up. But, like, I don't think they want this character to quite be that.
I don't know. I think his performance for what this movie is fine. He does manage to, like...
It's kind of... And the other thing is it's like, unrelenting quips that don't really land.
Which, honestly, I don't know. I guess this is another case of, we've talked about it before, you're not a Steve Martin guy. Maybe you're not a Charlie Sheen guy either. This is kind of just his vibe, I think.
Yeah. I mean, what would you say is, like, Charlie Sheen in his prime? Like, what if you were to, like, sell someone on...
I mean...
Two and a Half
Would
Men.
Would it have been the late... I don't know. Like, I think, like, I feel like Charlie Sheen's kind of run, if we're not counting Two and a Half Men, because that was technically a really big success.
Was he in The
success.
Phantom? Was that? Or that was Alec Baldwin, wasn't it?
The Phantom?
Yeah. What am I thinking of?
No, The Shadow?
The Shadow, yeah.
No, that was Alec Baldwin. The Phantom was Billy Zane. I think, I don't know, I would say Charlie Sheen's first kind of run would have been, I guess, in the 80s. I suppose that might have been his peak. I think he might have been part of the Rat Pack, right?
Sure.
Or the Brat Pack, excuse me.
I don't believe it.
like, you know, Wall Street, Platoon. And then I think, like, in the early 90s, Hot Shots, like the two Hot Shots movies were popular. I guess his run would have been, like, I don't know, mid to late 80s to, like, early 90s. And then again in the 2000s with Two and a Half Men, because that lasted a long time. It was a huge hit. I don't know. I suppose his movie peak would have been some point in the 80s or early 90s.
Yeah.
So with that said, I would say, like, he's still making movies at this point, but they're not nearly as big as, you know, his previous hits.
This might be, like, the drop-off point.
This would be, like,
point.
In the downturn, I would say.
Probably. Yeah.
Because it is crazy. This, he had Hot Shots Part Deux, which was a hit and was very successful and funny. This would be probably the beginning of the downturn.
I can't believe he was like only 29, and when they
crazy.
He looks like he's in his late 30s or something.
But if I'm gonna give him props, and like he said, I think inadvertently the kind of bloated like alcohol face kind of works for his character in this, especially since it's found out later that. He was going to go to the Olympics in 1980, or maybe it was 84, or no, it was 80, but he couldn't because that was the year that, like, I don't know, the Russians, or someone, they boycotted, America boycotted the Olympics because the Russians
right.
were there or something, I can't remember exactly. Yeah. And this comes up a few times in the movie, he has, like, this Sports Illustrated, like, card or, like, cover that he keeps with him, and it shows, he's a gymnast.
Yeah, that picture is pretty funny.
Which does not come into play until the very end of the movie. He does not use his gymnast skills at all.
The picture is great.
Yeah, he keeps making a joke about how bad his haircut is. But anyway, that won't come into play until the very end of the movie. And it's only in service, really, of a gag. Like, it doesn't serve any kind of plot point or anything like that.
I'll say, too, like, this up until, you know, the point where... The dame has came to his office. They're like, I gotta jump. Let me jump. And up until that first jump, I wouldn't say I'm like fully on board, but I'm like, I'm not thinking like, whoa, this is worse than Drop Zone yet. Right now I'm like, okay, like I'm, you know, this is now our second skydiving sequence. This feels about right. We're about a half hour into skydiving sequences on the skydiving movie. I'm getting my allotted fill.
We're about a half hour in. This is probably like 10, 15 minutes in.
I think it does take a little while for the second jump, by the time we get to the second jump.
I think it's within 20 minutes, I think.
Yeah, maybe 20. It's more than
this
10.
Were you sick while you were watching this?
No. No, I was very aware of the time. But yeah, like, and so this, we get this like daring drop. And so she's going to... He decides to do it. It's like, yeah, sure, I'll let you jump by yourself. And
they do this hand wavy training, like, okay, I'm gonna put you in this harness and you're gonna like dangle around. All right, dangle to the left, dangle to the right. All right, you got it.
Yeah,
that's essentially the training.
He's like he's in his office, like shoves the window blinds down so like no one sees what he's doing.
They all think they're banging or something. Which he wants to go tandem with her later. This is the 90s, man. Anyway, they're on the plane. They're going to jump. Oh, this kind of made me laugh. Melvin Van Peebles is the pilot of this plane for like 2 minutes. He's in this movie for like 2 minutes. But anyway, he says that, hey, there's a plane. Natasha Kinski says, hey, I thought I saw a plane. And this causes Charlie Sheen to go up to the front like, what the hell? Like, hey, is there a plane up here? It's like, no, I don't see anything. He looks back to Natasha Kinski and she's gone. And Charlie Sheen freaks out. He's like, what the hell? He looks out the door and she's already going down. And it looks like she's turned into a dummy, essentially, at this point.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, shit, she's a dummy. I got to go. And he jumps after her and he almost catches her. And he's like, hey, pull your cord. What the hell are you doing? They kind of separate and she reaches... the titular terminal velocity, and then, as they say in the movie, bounces.
Terminal velocity is the maximum speed attainable by an object as it falls.
Yeah, and if you're a human, that means you can forget about dental records, man. Your teeth turn into chiclets. So anyway, this forget is kind of a point in the movie, like a more somber tone in the movie where Charlie Sheen's talking to one of the other guys at the flight or the skydiving school, and it's just like, dude, I know we used to joke about people bouncing, but when I saw her body hit the ground, I don't think I'm going to be joking about this anymore.
It's so funny, too, because, like, he's really fucking up this school. Like, because first, yeah. the movie opens
the same
with, like,
day.
Yeah, the movie opens with him, like, oops, I accidentally parachuted in my adult clothes to the children's party. Oh, no, this looks pretty bad. And then
I exposed myself.
Then later that night, like, well, I killed somebody.
And the FAA immediately comes in to question.
They shut down the school, don't they?
They shut it down, and rightfully so.
Charlie Sheen, you are never going to be a skydiver again. Like, this is unacceptable behavior.
Justifiably. And so Charlie Sheen's just like, this is bullshit. I know I strapped her in. I did it 1,000 times. So this begins the mystery portion of the movie. Like, who was this woman? I'm going to go into her locker where she stored her purse and all her stuff and find out
this
who she
was. Okay, and this is where...
Because he's like, she killed herself.
This is where we talked about maybe getting a whiff of something. This is where I start to get, like, blown in the face by it. I'm like, oh, God. Oh, no. No. This is where I think it kind of goes off the rails, is investigating her. And we'll get to it, but I think the problem is there's some momentum towards investigating her, right? Like, trying to figure out, like, what...
Okay, she lives in Tucson.
Right.
Let's go check out her. Yeah.
And he's, like, kind of tracking her down and trying to piece together, like, oh, did she fake her death? It takes so long for this movie...
Well, no, he thinks she killed herself.
Right. No, but I'm just saying...
He wants to know why.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, as the movie progresses, finding these things out. And I think the big... thing that I was struggling with is, like, I don't think we know, like, why she did any of this or why it matters that she did this until, like, the end of the movie. And so I think, like, the motivation
why she starts this whole thing. I thought you meant we don't find out why this whole chain of events starts. It turns out, so as he's investigating, he goes into her apartment, he finds a picture of her in, like, a skydiving outfit. It's like,
yeah, she basically has, like, a
before,
yeah, a. yeah, she's like, I've never skydived before, but she goes to the apartment and it's like, number one skydiver, like, is, like, listed all over. Yes. Photos of her, like, skydiving with the Pope or whatever, and yeah.
And that's when Shooter McGavin comes in. He's like, who are you, the boyfriend? And he's asking Charlie Sheen, where is the body? Which is like, what? Because the person they killed earlier from the beginning of the movie that found the plane, they kill her and leave it, like, they pose her, like, in the shower to make it look like she, like, slipped in the shower and died or something like that. But they're back there and the body is gone. So now it becomes like, well, what was this lady's connection from the beginning of the movie with Natasha Kinski, who supposedly killed herself? And we've eventually Charlie Sheen finds Natasha Kinski. He finds that he sees the video footage that was shot of the jump, and there were two planes, and he's like, what the fuck? And
footage of him, like, watching the footage back and, like, slowing it down and, like, frame by framing it, like the Zapruder film kind of vibe.
Which I thought was funny. There was a moment where he rewinds it, and there should be, like, you know, it's an old VHS. He rewinds it and he freeze frames. There should be, like, kind of static. But there's a moment when he pauses it, they're static, and then for no reason, the static just disappears so that he can clearly see the two plates.
The static politely got out of the way so he could see the plot critical moment.
So now, and he realizes there's another plane, and up to this point, there's been, like, a small, like, Cessna that's just been, like, flying around that's been, like, stalking Charlie Sheen, I guess. And he's like, what the hell's the deal with that plane? Finally, he's like, all right, I'm going to follow that plane. And who does he find at the end but Natasha Kinski, alive and well? She faked her death.
Son of a bitch.
And she did so by dropping the lifeless body of her friend out of the plane.
Yeah, it was her. It was the corpse of her roommate, right?
Yeah.
And where so did Charlie she? Sheen okay, like, can you answer fuck? Me this? Like, this is something I was wondering. Where did she bring the corpse, like, onto Charlie Sheen's plane?
No, no. So what? How they did this was
explain Natasha how they did this.
Natasha Kinski's, I guess. I'm assuming this guy is also a former KGB. We find out that she was former KGB.
Everyone's former KGB except Charlie
Everyone's
Sheen.
Everyone's former KGB in the movie. Spoiler alert, except Charlie Sheen.
You know, everyone knows the famous KGB enclave of Tucson, Arizona.
So we find out that Natasha Kinski had an accomplice who flew a plane above Charlie Sheen's plane. They were above Charlie Sheen's plane.
Oh, okay.
And
so
I guess she gave some sort of signal, and they dropped the body out from the plane that was above Charlie Sheen. And then Natasha Kinski jumped out, and I guess she says she like veered off to the other way.
She just like went out of the way, which is a little weird. Like why they wouldn't have seen her do that. But,
well, I mean, I guess Charlie Sheen would have been looking the other way following the body. But in any event, like, so that's what happened. They dressed, they said, oh, it was really easy to fake one of your, or duplicate one of your flight suits or something like that. So, and evidently, in addition to throwing the body out, they also posed as a morgue worker, I guess, so that they could quickly cremate the body so they couldn't identify it with
Dave, you may say this is convoluted, but how else would you fake a death? Other than going to a skydiving instructor demanding that night and then having another plane ready to throw a fake body of your friend out the top.
So this, this is where, again, the plot of this movie, the stench of it is so overpowering.
You couldn't have just lit your home on fire and left the body of your friend in there to be identified later. No, this is, I can't think of another way.
Yeah, it's pretty sweaty. So we find out that the reason she did this was that she could get her former ex-KGB associates off of her back, make them think she's dead, so that she can go around and steal the location of the plane that we saw in the beginning of the movie. And we get our second skydiving sequence of the movie here. So basically she extorts him. It's like, all right, listen, you help me do this thing and I'll go to the police and say I'm not dead. Basically, that'll exonerate you.
Yeah. What I need here is I need to know by this point what her deal is. Like, because all we know is she's trying to get away from the KGB. But we don't know.
Well, and she's trying to like do some secret agent shit to get something.
Right. And I feel like by this point, we need to know what there needs to be like a scene at this point where she's like the KGB, blah, blah, blah. And I am trying to blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't understand. I get that she has beef. She's trying to get away from the KGB, but that's not enough. Like, I need to know, like, why? What is her deal? What is she trying to do? There's a whole like crew of people with her, and we have no idea what their deal is, what they want. They're just, all we know is they're trying to escape, I guess. But it's not enough. It's not. It's like scene missing of like. We're trying
it's building,
to
Mike. It's built now. They're introducing a MacGuffin. Like we gotta like parachute into the middle of Tempe, Arizona. I don't know if you noticed this, but the place they drop into, which looks like Axis Chemicals or something from Batman, that is in Tempe, Arizona. Have you been there? It's like by ASU. It's like it looks like this like chemical plant or something.
Wait, yeah, it's not anywhere I would have like been per se, but I may
but
have
you
drove
see it
past
you're driving
it.
Around
yeah.
downtown.
Yeah,
Tempe.
It looks like kind of like oil refinery vibes. Is that Yeah.
So they go in there. And I remember the first time I watched this, I didn't realize this was an Arizona set movie. So a lot of Leo pointing gifs as an Arizonian watching.
Oh, yeah.
This
is like your Free Willy.
Exactly. Yes.
Terminal Velocity.
Yeah. Whereas you got the, you know, the beautiful oceans sights, I get what looks like a chemical plant. Go Arizona.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with a Batman climax setting.
Oh, look, that's where Alex Murphy got gunned down.
Oh, look, that was a stand-in for the ruins of old Detroit.
Town pride, man. Anyway, so they parachute it. Well, Charlie Sheen parachutes in, and she wants him to get this little disc. We don't know what this disc is yet. Apparently, it's like a tiny little CD that we find out later has the location of the plane from the beginning of the movie. What's the deal with the plane? I don't know. You're going to have to wait later until we give you that information.
They're like adding stuff, and they haven't gotten to the, what are we doing here?
Well, it's like they really stretch out this thing.
It's like
of
they've
like,
they've served me a dish, and there's so many garnishes on top of the dish, I don't even know what it is. I can't see under all the garnishes what I'm eating.
What is going on here?
Yeah, and this, yeah, so James Ginn, at this point, they have this disc. Charlie Sheen was able to recover it. They get out of there. And then now, but now Charlie Sheen's just like, no, I'm not going to give you this until like, I called like a friend, who is James Gandolfini, who actually is posing as a DA agent.
My favorite part of the movie
too.
James Gandolfini in this movie is my favorite part of the movie. I think he's really good.
He's bringing a fun, like bad guy energy to this.
He feels like, you know, for lack of a better word, it's one of those, like, he knows what movies he's in kind of vibe. Yeah. Like he's hamming it up.
This is incredible.
No.
Would you like a certs?
No, thanks.
I'm sorry, it's a nervous habit that I have.
Give me those.
I'll take them all.
So he poses as a DA agent, and Charlie Sheen mistakenly brings him along as like a witness or something.
And that's like, he's posing as a DA agent, but I think it's important to note, like, we all think he's a DA agent. Like it's a reveal later in the road. Like at this point, the audience and Charlie Sheen thinks that James Gandolfini is working for the
DA. And then also he's like kind of out of his element. Like he's a DA agent who's like, this is crazy shit. I'll stay in the car. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Only, but we find out at this point that during this meetup to do this exchange, James Gandolfini is actually a KGB agent, and whoops, he's killed Natasha Kinski's pilot and is now holding her like, I'm going to kill her unless you give me the thing.
His reveal and like his switch to like crazy Russian KGB guy is really fun.
Yeah, he suddenly goes into the... that's another funny thing about this movie, like the American actors who... go into a Russian accent, you know.
Yes.
Dubai.
It's like the vibe of, I don't know if he does this, and I don't think he does in the movie, but it's just the vibe of like going from like the oh geez to like screaming, shooting a gun in the air is kind of the character change.
I trained you. How dare you? How dare you betray us? And we get a crazy action sequence here at the airport during this meetup, during this exchange that goes bad. So they start, and I will say, to Terminal Velocity's credit, it like. Well, I don't want to give it credit, actually, because this is one of those movies watching it where the action scenes and the gunplay are fine, you know, like loud and like booming. It gives you what an action movie should give. But then every dialogue scene, it's so fucking quiet. I had to crank the volume on the dialogue and then crank it down again.
One
when
of
the
those.
Action started up.
I don't recall having, you know, I didn't really mind it either way. But I will
yeah, obviously, because you got the great like ISO booth with the Atmos sound that was perfectly calibrated by George Lucas THX systems.
I know. I don't know why you don't watch movies in there with me.
I try to, but you always reserve it before I do.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, you got to get early on those reservations. I reserved this
boss,
last year.
Why can't I pull some weight around here?
But I do think. To drop, you know, not to bring up Drop Zone, but this is more so with the other air.
Well, no, definitely bring up Drop Zone. This is the year of skydiving movies. We got to compare these things.
Well, I think to bring up the other April movies, we've just been spoiled with really good sound. You know,
I mean,
thinking about Air Force One, Con Air. Those are both movies that I think
Academy Award nominated.
Right, both nominated, only lost to Titanic, which like you're going to lose to Titanic, but like. Those are some of the best sound movies, and this one is I would say this is by far the worst sound of the April movies. It was nothing to write home about, I thought.
I guess, well, it was frustrating because I thought I did have to like turn it down because the action scenes were very loud. I thought the sound design for the action scenes was fine. It was like indicative of like this era of action film, like super loud, like they're cranking it up.
It was fine. It wasn't
it was
though
fine.
the treat that we got with the other films. There's no there's no sequence in this movie that we get in every other airplane movie I can think of where it does the cool thing where the plane is flying over and the sound travels across. It's almost like a demo for surround sound. Mm-hmm. We never get that moment in this movie. If you're doing an airplane action movie, you gotta have the moment where, like, the airplane, like, flies up, maybe barely misses something, you know, like Air Force One.
Well, to be fair, this is another aspect of Airpool. So, like, I feel like for the first two movies we watched were more airplane-centric. This is skydiving-centric.
Okay, you could have done the same thing with skydiving. Have the whoosh sound, you know, travel across, you know, from left to right. You know, you don't get any... Yeah, Dave's doing it right now. When we release our Atmos edition of the podcast...
Well, it's funny because my track is being recorded in mono, so that's not going to track.
Imagine how cool that would sound.
Yeah, see, I can't even, my recording equipment is mono. You've got stereo. Like, what the hell is going on here?
I'm recording in the ISO booth.
See, here's see, this is the problem. I'm stuck over here recording. Like, I got the old ass busted like rig, and you got the cool
held together with duct tape and toothpicks.
Your part of the podcast is getting award, like Academy Award nominations. Meanwhile, I'm getting like a Razzie over here.
I'm in like the where the New York Times records the daily, like in their professional.
Anywho, where were we? Oh yeah, this action scene. So this is one of those crazy action scenes where, like, we get some payoffs for things that were established earlier in the movie where you're like, okay, that's coming, like, back. Like, for instance, when Charlie Sheen is talking to, like, some crazy guy on the airfield that's building, like, a suicide machine, I guess, that'll go, like, 350 miles per hour and smash into a wall, you know that's coming back.
So I feel like there's a part around this time of the movie where it does kind of fully lose me about, like, I don't mean like, oh, I'm not liking it. I mean, like, it literally loses me where I'm confused. I feel like there's some part of here, and help me out with this, like, what happened? I feel like I blinked, and then Charlie Sheen and, what's her name? Natasha Kinski. Natasha Kinski are sitting on, like, a roller coaster ride that's, like, shooting on a rocket that's, like, launching them into the air.
Well, so here's the chain of events. The deal goes wrong. You think they're going to get killed by the KGB who shows up, but then the crazy guy I mentioned earlier that was talking to Charlie Sheen, who lives on the airfield, I guess, sees what's happening. He's like, oh my God, there's, like, gunplay going on. Like, what's going on? So he decides to walk out with a bazooka. He just has a bazooka, I guess. This was not established. And then he blows up this car. He blows up Charlie Sheen's car by accident. And this allows, this is a momentary distraction that allows Kinski and Charlie Sheen to run away. They run into
this death trap. Because they're distracted by the blown up car.
Say again?
They're distracted by the blown up car.
Well, well, it allows them to escape. Like, obviously, everyone, like, hits the deck, and then they run for, like, the suicide machine. They jump in, they get away, and they're able to.
What is this machine?
It's a suicide machine that this crazy guy is building. Because Charlie Sheen talks to him earlier.
This is in the Tempe oil field or whatever.
No, this is like some airfield elsewhere in Arizona.
Okay.
For the meetup that they're doing. Because Charlie Sheen stole the, or he managed to get the, this sounds so stupid as I explain it. Like, he took the little tiny disc or whatever.
Right, he has the MacGuffin.
Yeah, the MacGuffin. The second act MacGuffin.
The second MacGuffin.
So they get into this, the suicide machine was set up because Charlie Sheen was talking to this crazy guy who lived on the airfield, and he tells the guy, like, this thing goes 350 miles per hour, like, it's suicide, and the guy's like, exactly.
This is maybe, I feel like this moment is one of where I'm like, I could see that this guy wrote Waterworld. Like, I'm getting some Waterworld vibes.
Yeah, this has Waterworld-y vibes here of, like, it's the smokers or something like that. Yeah,
they would have built this.
How fast does this thing go?
About 350.
You're gonna kill yourself.
Exactly. But what a ride.
Anyway, they're able to parachute out of there. They escape. We get some more scenes of, like, Charlie Sheen. Basically, we get a few scenes of this where Charlie Sheen's just like, what's your deal? And this is when Natasha Kinski finally reveals to him, I'm ex-KGB.
Yeah.
And but it's like there's like the kind of the noir, more of those noir elements where it's like, I don't know if I could trust you, but then inexplicably I'm gonna fall in love with you right here, right now for no reason.
It's really weird too, where is this where she kind of drops like Russia is about to collapse,
like economically or something.
Yeah, it's like insane. Like it's this weird like alternate history kind of vibe, or I don't know, or it's just like. Yeah, Russia is about, it's like revealed that I guess no one knows this, but Russia is on the verge of total societal collapse, and they need to like steal gold or something to pay off the government's debt.
So she says things are bad, but I don't know if she explains like, I'm looking for gold. Like we don't find that out until later when they find the plane.
Sure.
Charlie Sheen reveals to her, like, oh, no, so I told you that I was in the car, but no, I actually had the little disc right here on me the whole time. They plug it into a little, like, gadget or whatever, and it's coordinates. And it turns out that they landed this plane that I guess the KGB hijacked in the Plain Graveyard or Plain Cemetery, which I've actually been to. It's near Tucson. Mm. It's literally like this is a plane cemetery or whatever. Just a ton of old planes there, like lined up as they are in the movie. And this is, perfect hiding spot for this plane to get in. And this actually made me laugh. When they're going on the plane, Charlie Sheen has convinced himself like, oh no, this is like some nuclear shit, isn't it?
Yeah.
And she tells him, like, here, put this over to protect your testicles. And she plays it straight and he's just like,
it's like a dinner plate. It's like a little like metal saucer.
Well, I think it's like a piece of like a coffee maker or something. He puts it over and then he eventually just walks in because I guess curiosity gets the better of him, and we find out that it's actually just a cache of gold, a lot of gold. And this is when Charlie Sheen like has that moment. I think honestly it made me laugh when he's like, don't worry, I have my Coffeetron dick protector with me.
Well, look at this.
I told you to wait.
Don't worry, I got my Coffeetron dick defender.
I never said it was nuclear. You just assumed.
I just thought that was a funny collection of words. But now we know the plot of the movie. Now we know why she did this. Because, okay, these ex-KGB guys stole this gold.
Yeah, now
they're going to use it to stage a coup in Russia, whereas she wants to give this back to Russia as, like, emergency, because she says it's $600 million. So yeah. She's like, this gold was meant to, like, stabilize the economy or something.
$600 million, not going to stabilize
that. Well, in 1994, it would have gone a lot further.
Sure, but I mean, it's just so bizarre.
It's a down payment for a better economy.
and this is, like you said, this is where we understand the plot of the movie. I think the movie is about an hour 40. I think we're like an hour 10 minutes into the movie at this point.
we realize what's happening, what the stakes
the
are.
The core motivation of all of our characters is finally revealed, which is, I think, the biggest... Not to harp on it too much, but I do think that's my biggest problem with the movie is for so much of the movie, I'm just like, why do I give a shit? Like, why, what do any of these people want? Like, I mean, I know what Charlie Sheen wants. He's trying to investigate it. Fine. But like, I need to know something about what these characters are after.
I feel like this would play better if, I mean, we're finding out information along with Charlie Sheen, but I feel like this would play better if the movie were more like The Fugitive, where he's on the run, you know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
And we're finding things out with him, and he's trying to, like, it's a constant barrage of, like, oh, they're coming after me because they think I killed this girl or whatever. Like,
or if, that's what's fun about The Fugitive. I can appreciate the unraveling of a mystery, you know, especially if we're in noir territory. Like, you know, maybe he doesn't understand what she wants, like, until later. But you have to give us something else then. Like, maybe give me something about the Charlie Sheen character to where I care more about him or like his backstory or like what he's got going on in his life or something. Yeah. But you don't get any of that. Like you only know Charlie Sheen as skydiver, like, you know, the him trying to get his good name back as a skydiver is not enough.
Well, and there's at no point are there like a bunch of people like after him because of this.
No, you know right. I mean? Yeah. No one, everyone is just, I think, glad that he's gone from that school. Like they're happy exactly. That he's nowhere to be seen anymore.
Like that could have been an element or that could have been a route this movie took.
Frankly, he should have faked his own death and just moved to a different town. He should have thrown a dummy out of the plane and just moved over to like Ohio and started a new skydiving school.
Yeah. So they find, she finds the gold. She reveals what the plot of the movie is, her whole motivation finally. But then the bad guys show up and they have to run away and kind of lick their wounds a little bit. And then we get this, again, another quiet scene like of dialogue where I have to crank the volume up because I can't hear jack shit. They're in this like diner in some Arizona town. And at this point, Charlie Sheen's just like, this is crazy. I've had enough. I don't know what's going on with this gold. I don't know if I could trust you.
This plot's so convoluted. I've had enough.
This plot's so convoluted. It's like, I don't know if I could trust you. And then he basically just tells her, like, get the hell out of here. Like, I don't want to, like, I'm done with this, you know? Mm-hmm. But then he discovers that, wait, what? I forgot. I literally hit a roadblock. I'm like, wait, what? How, why does he?
Oh, you're going to have to help me here.
He has a sudden change. Oh, wait,
is this, does he see the picture at this point?
Oh, yes. Okay. Because she took a picture in a photo booth saying I'm alive. Like he did not kill me.
It literally says Ditch did not kill me.
Yes. Oh, she puts it in his wallet. He goes to pay for something. That's right. Yeah. Okay. I couldn't remember how that happened.
She exonerates him. Like she did. Exonerates,
then he realizes she did care about me.
I guess.
Like, okay, I'm gonna do a daredevil stunt and save her.
She did want to make sure I didn't lose my skydiving license, I guess.
And that I wasn't thrown in jail or something.
I mean, it's so kind of the bare minimum. It's not like she's like fawning over him. It's more just like, hey, just by the way, like he didn't kill me.
But it is kind of, it's played as if she does love me.
I know, yeah. It's played as like she left him a note like, I love you, Ditch.
Yes. But it's like, okay, she was going to exonerate me, so I guess I'll go and save her. Because she ran off. It's like, well, no, we have to go back and stop that shipment of gold. And I love this, too, because he enlists the help of what's his name? Ron Howard's dad. Like in real life, Ron Howard's dad, I forget his name. He's just some pilot that works at the airfield or something.
Rance.
But I love
Howard.
This because he goes to save her, and when he goes to the airfield, he's kind of doing that movie thing where he's like peeking around a corner. I guess she's just been captured. Like we don't see how she gets captured. That cut scenes cut from movie.
Scene missing,
yeah.
Yeah.
She gets thrown into the trunk of
she's in the trunk of a car. Yeah.
It's like a Mercedes or something like that. I can't remember.
She's in the trunk of a car that they fly into the air for some reason.
Well, because for some reason, despite James Gandolfini's objections, Sheena McGavin's like, no, this is an American-made classic. They don't make it anymore. I'm bringing it with us. It's like, okay.
I mean,
I'm bringing it with us. We need it for the action scene later.
It is
later.
So clearly working backwards from the action scene they want to have. Like, how can we get her in the trunk of a car in a plane?
Yes, it's working backwards because it makes no sense. Because James Gandolfini,
even
right.
if
like,
they want to take the car, even if they want to take the car on the plane, why would they put her in the trunk of the car? Surely there's got to be like a better place to keep an eye on her.
I know. And then at some point, James Gandolfini's like, "All right, where are we? I got some trash I need to drop."
Yeah.
That lake, the one over the Indian reservation. What is it?
San Carlos.
How long till we're there?
Another 10 minutes?
What? I have to throw out some garbage.
All right.
This is so stupid. I know this is a stupid movie. I know I'm defending it, but I also know it's very, very stupid. Anyway, Charlie Sheen enlists the help of Ron Howard's dad. He claims to be an FAA guy, and he deputizes Ron Howard's dad in a really goofy moment. Like, this was stupid comedy. This did not work for me.
Are you waiting for me? You're like pausing, like you're waiting for me to say, like, you know, it worked for me, Dave. I was losing it.
I imagine it. Well, I don't. Who knows? Maybe in 1994, the audience was rolling in the aisles watching this.
Ron Howard's dad.
Anyway, we get our third and final skydiving sequence of the movie, and I'm sure at this moment, Mike is finally like, "Yes, finally skydiving."
This is where I like sat up. And I'm like, okay, and this is the best scene in the movie, right? Like,
absolutely,
we can agree on that.
Yes, this is genuinely like entertaining and like well shot.
Yes, this is a good. So basically, they drop the car With her in it. And
well, hold on. We got to say first, like, so Charlie Sheen tells Ron Howard, like, all right, I'm going to walk out onto the wing of the plane, and then I'm going to, like, do, like, a turn or whatever, and then I'll be on top of the plane sitting up. I'll be able to reach on and grab, like, the, you know, the plane above or whatever. Which is a crazy thing. Like, and it's a cool stunt. Like, there's a guy on the wing of the plane that the wing wrote the plane rotates around, so suddenly the guy's on the top of the plane so that he's in a position so that he can grab on to, like, the hatchway of the plane above and, like, supposedly, I guess, crawl up, although I don't think that's possible.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he does. He does it. It's a movie. He does. He's able to pull himself in despite the force of wind coming at him.
Charlie Sheen's stunt double does it.
Yeah. He gets into the car, and yeah, at this moment, like, Charlie Sheen's, like, because he knows that Natasha Kinski is in the trunk of the car, so he's like, I know what I'll do. I'll pull this baby in reverse while we'll drive this car out, and it's a crazy sequence. It is well shot. Jimmy Gavin, that's his car. He jumps up on the hood without a parachute as the car, like, falls out, and we get a really cool shot where, like, I guess there must have been another skydiver, like, that jumped first, and then the car went out of the plane, and it's a really cool tracking shot.
And yeah, I mean, he's like unable to open the trunk, so he, like, jumps out of the car.
Well, he like pulls the latch for the trunk that's up in the front, but it, like, pulls off in movie fashion.
Right. Of course, it won't open. That'd be too easy.
And of course, Shooter McGavin, he jumps on the hood of the car, and I love there's this moment where he's like, "Give me your parachute!" And he just starts shooting at the windshield, and he flies off.
Yeah, doesn't he? Just kind of like, boo. Flies off.
He flies off, and he's still shooting in midair, like, ah!
Give me your parachute!
And this is, I like his death, and, you know, he presumably is going to achieve terminal velocity and die, which is a fitting
which
end.
Which we should see. I thought we should see that.
Yeah, we don't. You're right. We just kind of see him fly off into the distance. Maybe it's setting up for the sequel. Like, maybe he survived. Somehow Shooter McGavin is alive.
But we get a cool sequence where, and to speak to the, so we mentioned in Drop Zone that the insert shots in that movie were atrocious. They look like whenever it was like you see skydiving, right, and right. Then whenever it's a moment, a shot of actually Wesley Snipes, it's clearly him in front of a bad green screen or whatever. This, I would say overall, the insert shots in this are, while not good, better than Drop Zone.
I think they're used better. Like, I feel like there's less of them. Like
there's less of them. And I feel like it's not someone in front of a green screen. It's usually like Charlie Sheen. Like, I think they just shoot it in a way where the camera's up and it's just like sky behind him. And maybe there's like a wind machine.
Yeah. I was reading about this, and I think, like, for some of that stuff, it wasn't just, you know, him in a green screen on a chair or whatever. Like, he was, like, hanging from something, and they, like, I think they had it suspended on, like, a wire and wherever they were shooting it, and he was, so they were something. Yeah. It's not bad, but I think the biggest smart thing about it is they just don't use him that much. Drop Zone was constantly doing them.
Like, the actual skydiving footage is great, and you see this car rotating through the air, and it's a cool scene.
He basically gets out of the car, kind of, like, crawls to the back of it and opens the trunk with a key.
He gets the key from Shooter McGavin. He opens it up, and they fly out, and I love this too. Like, they introduce, I don't think these are in Arizona that I know of, at least not where they would be flying, but there's, like, wind farms, you know.
This is so funny. The way that, like, so yeah, they basically, like, the last peril of the movie is these wind turbines they're landing on. And it reminds me of the Austin Powers scene where the guy's driving, like, where they're driving really slow with the one, like, goon or whatever. And he's like, no. And Austin's like, turn left. Like, you see these wind turbines and they're spinning so slowly, like, just kind of off in the distance. But then it'll be like, no! And then it cuts to, like, a close-up of the wind turbine, and they're
going
like,
super
five
fast.
Times. Right. They're, like, going so fast and churning. But then it cuts away, and you just see they're kind of slowly, quietly spinning, you know.
So then
and there's not that many of them. There's, like, four of them right there, like, in a very specific area.
They manage to land. They think they. It's like, oh, thank you for saving my life. But that, and it's a comically great shot because you see in the background, out of focus, two legs, like coming from the sky, and then it hits them, and you try to. Oh, it's James Gandolfini. For some reason, he jumped after them.
This is It mirrors,
which makes no sense.
It mirrors Drop Zone, where like after the climax, there's still like, oh, that one guy. We still, or no, Con Air. Where after the climax, there's like, wait, there's still that one guy who we gotta
go get him,
take care of, yeah. And we get a little action scene, right, with Charlie Sheen and James Gandolfini,
and Gandolfini stabs Natasha Kinski in the side. And it's supposed to be like an oh no moment, but honestly, I'm just sort of like, yeah, whatever. I don't really care.
Yeah, I mean, she's not dying.
And I want to point out again, there is absolutely no reason that James Gandolfini should have jumped out of the plane after them. I mean, there's some gunplay, I think, in the plane, and it messes up the hydraulics, and the plane is forced to land. But it doesn't make sense that Gandolfini would have left the gold that he's transporting.
Right. I was going to say the gold is still on the plane, right?
It's still on the plane.
Yeah. Why did he do that?
I don't know.
They don't care about Natasha. They care about the gold.
I know. He should not have jumped out of the plane. Because it's not like they could have just like fucked off with the gold. Natasha Kinski wouldn't have known where they were going, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, he wants revenge, so he goes to fight him. But because
it's funny. See, like we have like this moment where our hero is fighting with our villain, but they're in the background of the wind turbines. And again, it's so funny because they're just small. They're slow wind turbines, but they're playing it like they're in like episode 3 and they're like on the Mustafar or whatever, like this oh god, it's so dangerous, this environment they're in, anything could go wrong here. And of course something does. We get
because they happen to get near the one wind turbine that's going 500 miles an hour. And that creates enough suction that Charlie Sheen's able to pull.
You imagine that if a wind turbine were actually doing this, it would like lift off the ground like a helicopter.
I know, right? it creates enough suction that Sheen can pull Gandolfini's ripcord, and the parachute gets sucked into the wind turbine. And this is the greatest crime this movie commits, in my opinion.
We don't see it.
We don't see anything.
Yep.
The most they do is you see like the wind turbine, which is now going slow for some reason. You see some blood on the turbine, and that's it. It looks like jelly. It is such. I mean, come on. Raiders of the Lost Ark was a PG movie. We at least get to see blood splatter in that movie.
Do like a really quick shot cutaway. You know, something.
Yeah, but they don't show you anything, and it is such a. It's so deflating.
You could have even if you'd got some really good sound design, maybe do something there. But there's nothing. It's so anticlimactic.
There's literally nothing. No sound design, even not even the suggestion.
Yeah.
It is such a bummer, and you're just like, that is like, that's the moment in any movie, G or R, doesn't matter what the rating is. Like, you have to get that satisfying end to the villain, and they don't show you.
It's the end of our movie, and it's just like a...
We don't even get a wet fart noise. We get no sound effect whatsoever. You just hear a, no, and then it cuts off. You're like, oh, okay.
Then basically it's like them, it like cuts from that to them in Russia getting like it's like the Star Wars end of Star Wars, except instead of getting medals in space, they're getting medals in Russia.
And finally, I guess they're paying off the whole backstory with Charlie Sheen getting denied, you know, Olympic gold. They give him a gold medal. Oh, this Russian gold looks good around your neck. And Charlie Sheen's just doing his stupid thing where he's saluting all the soldiers. And then he goes to sleep and I'm going through the hair because I'm a funny guy. It's a really goofy end to the movie, and it's also surprising. You're like, oh wow, they actually went to Russia and they shot in Russia for this one scene in this movie. Because I guess it's 1994, we can film in Russia now.
I know part of me is like, did somehow Russia finance this movie?
It's like they could have easily just like, well, it's odd that this is in the movie at all. I guess it's supposed to be like a redemption arc for Sheen. Like, oh, I guess I'm not a selfish prick or something.
Weird thing to see in a Hollywood movie. Like,
it was odd.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different time, I guess, when we were more like America was more friendly with Russia. But it's just a weird thing to end with, like, this is like you'd expect the scene of where they're getting the president is like giving him a medal, right? The U.S. president or something like that. But it's weird to see that like the Russian government is like, thank you, Charlie Sheen.
Well, thank you, Natasha Kinski, former KGB agent, for delivering this gold that I guess will save our economy. It's just like, it's so odd. Usually with a movie like this, you're like, no, it should end with Charlie Sheen and Natasha Kinski kissing on like the rock where they are, you know, and then fade to black. Like, that's the typical ending. But no, they're like, let's do Star Wars.
Yeah.
Let's do the award ceremony. But then it's very strange.
Then how do we, isn't the last shot them like walking down a road?
Like, in Moscow.
Where? Okay. They're just in okay. I was, it was another one where like them in the rocket ship or whatever, I was like, wait, how do we get to them just like walking down a highway or something? And that's like,
walking down like a courtyardy area, like a sidewalk.
Okay. Yeah. I felt like it ended like the Incredible Hulk like ending where you just get them like walking down the side of a road.
Well, again, it is odd that it's just like, wow, they actually went to Moscow to film them walking down a sidewalk.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's cool. Nowadays it would just be green screenopolis, but they actually went to Moscow and filmed them. That's
it's
cool,
it's funny. Yeah, it's funny looking at the production.
And it's actually Charlie Sheen and her. It's not like two doubles. It's them in Moscow.
Yeah, it's funny looking at the production where it's like the movie was shot in Palm Springs, California, Tehachapi, California, Flagstaff, Arizona, Tucson, and Moscow.
Yeah, you're like, whoa, what are those things? But that's Drop Zone. That's Servo Velocity.
Wow.
It's funny, too, because, like, I don't think these movies could be mixed. Well, maybe you can mix up the titles, but, like, plot-wise, they couldn't be any more different from each other.
Yeah. I mean, the similarity is the skydiving, and we really just don't get that much skydiving in this movie. We get a couple skydiving scenes, but it is not, it's not the same as the anime, like, let's learn about this skydiving subculture that you get in Drop Zone.
Because Drop Zone is literally like Point Break for skydiving. That's what that movie is trying to be. This one is like, it's an action movie with skydiving in it.
I think it's even more, I think they're going for like a neo-noir with skydiving in
it. Yeah, and we should say in 1994, this was the first of the skydiving movies that came out. This came out September 23rd. It had a budget of $50 million, which for 1994 is pretty large. Evidently, it only
could save a government.
No, I imagine this was also funded by the Russian government as well. But anyway, it doesn't look like this was too big of a success. Drop Zone, on the other hand, came out a few months later in December. It had a budget of $45 million. It grossed $64 million. So Drop Zone was technically a success with a smaller budget.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, it feels like how I feel about these movies. Like, they both didn't do that well, but Drop Zone did a little better.
Drop Zone made money. Terminal Velocity sounds like lost money.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's Terminal Velocity. I guess we'll get into recommendations now. Did you have any closing thoughts on Terminal Velocity?
We didn't mention it's just a great shot, I think, about 39 minutes in where they're like getting on a plane. Natasha Kinski like is like behind Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen's like stepping up. Natasha Kinski like grabs his ass. And there's like, as she does that, there is a guitar like, wow.
Well, isn't it flipped? Well, it's a callback because he does it to her first.
Oh, it's a callback.
In the first skydiving sequence, and then she does it to him, and he's like, oh, now I know what that feels like. Well, I'm going to say,
That was my only note.
Against all odds, I actually am going to recommend Terminal Velocity as a dumb... This is not a good movie. I'm just going to say that right now. Not a good movie, but it's only an hour and 40 minutes. There's some fun, stupid stuff in it. There's a genuinely like exciting action sequence at the end with the card falling out of the plane. And I don't know. I think... And I'll say this. I don't think this movie is ever boring. It's constantly in motion. It doesn't... rarely stops. You're shaking your head. You can't believe
it stops all the time. It reaches screeching halts of convoluted messes.
I don't know. I think there's always stuff going on.
I would recommend that last scene. Like, watch that on YouTube.
Well, a YouTube clip or something.
Yeah, but okay. I would not recommend this movie. I would say, I think this is our bottom April movie.
We hit terminal velocity. We just hit the ground.
I think we've hit terminal velocity. Yeah.
I don't want to say this is not a glowing recommendation by any means. This is like I'm recommending this on a level of like a bad.
No, let's get in the store. Dave's Picks, just terminal velocity.
No, this is just like a fun dumb movie to watch. Like, you know, it gets a passing grade. It would be like
the worst movie we've ever seen or anything like that.
Like how like a D plus is technically like a passing grade, right?
This is maybe
a C minus.
This is like
C minus.
This is like you pass, but there is going to be a parent teacher conference.
Yes. Anyway, yeah, this gets my lowest passing grade, but it's still a passing grade nonetheless. I enjoyed myself watching this movie. This is my second time watching this, actually. I watched this last year. And I enjoyed it just as much this time as I did last time. Although I will say it is a crime that we do not get to see James Gandolfini get splattered.
You watched this with a friend of the show, Morton Hoof, didn't you?
We watched together. He stopped by. He was returning some videotapes. And it turns out that he did not enjoy this movie. And he actually rated it lower than you did on Letterboxd. You gave this 1.5 stars. He gave it 1 star.
Wow.
And he said he thought it was very amateurish. He thought the filmmaking was just bad. Like, there are some moments in this movie, we didn't mention this, like the close, there are some close-up shots that are really odd.
I didn't want to say anything could just be too negative, but I do think the cinematography in this movie is like atrocious outside of the action scenes. Yeah, you're right. It's close up, and I feel like we don't get a lot of context for what is going on. And wouldn't you believe this is one of the guys who went on to shoot the Bourne movies.
What was the guy's name?
The cinematographer, Oliver Wood.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he went on to shoot I know that name. He shot the, yeah. He did some other, what else did he do other than Bourne?
He did Die Hard 2.
Okay, yeah.
He direct, or let's see.
A very red movie. Die Hard 2 is a very red movie. As I recall.
Oh, wow. You remember that movie Grimsby from 2016? He also did the 2016 Ben-Hur.
Oh, wow.
Talladega Nights. That's something.
So it sounds like the people behind this movie, the pedigree, like went on to have good careers, or in some cases, like were riding
high off
former
successes. He was the cinematographer for Rudy.
Wow.
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Mr. So Holland's Opus.
I guess he was just having an off.
Face off.
you were gritting your teeth. Face off.
The Adventures of Pluto Nash. This guy's career is all over the place. I mean,
that seems to be you could say that for everyone with this movie. These people's careers are all over the place.
He shot Step Brothers.
Wow.
This is so, these movies are just like random hodgepodge of movies.
Anyway, so yeah, Nick didn't like this. Morton Hoof didn't care for this movie one bit.
Yeah, good to know.
But so that's our thoughts on Terminal Velocity. How do you think this, let's kind of take into account here. Let's step back, look at the April selection. Like, how would you rank these movies?
Real quick, I do have to mention, sorry, I'm not just going to keep shouting at the career of Oliver Wood, but his last movie, the last movie Oliver Wood shot, Morbius.
Oh, no!
Okay,
possibly a future episode of the show.
Yeah, the I think April was a success. If I were to go like quick and dirty rankings, I think bottom is Terminal Velocity. Mm-hmm. I think above that would be Drop Zone. Above that is Air Force One, and then number one with a bullet for me is Con Air. Con Air was my favorite movie of April. I think it's just so insane, so ridiculous, and it is very much like we have Michael Bay at home directing or whatever, but I love it. I feel like it is A movie I would, it's of all the movies we watch, Con Air is the one that I'm like, I could see myself like watching that again sometime, you know?
All right. Well, I'm not going to mirror that exactly. In fact, it's going to be completely different. My ratings, I'm going to go bottom is Drop Zone. I'm sorry, Wesley Snipes. But again, like the fact that his character was so inconsistent in that movie kind of really killed it for me.
I get it.
And it wasn't as fun as Terminal Velocity in my mind. That's why I rank Terminal Velocity above Drop Zone. Then I'm going to say Con Air, and then I'm going Air Force One despite its problematic politics. Again, I think I was just really taken with the sound design in Air Force One. It was just so good.
It was
a real movie ass experience.
Your shitty viewing experience.
One where I watched it in like the Atmos chamber. I managed to squeeze a viewing in there before you took it from me for all the other movies we watched this year or in April. But I think I was just really taken with the experience of watching Air Force One. So who knows, like in a future date, I would flip Con Air and Air Force One. Because as you said, Con Air is just so crazy. It's filled with crazy characters. It's one crazy thing after another.
It's such an ultimate like popcorn movie or like pizza and beer movie, you know, like with some friends.
Like especially at the end when like they could have ended the movie with the plane crashing on the Vegas Strip,
right?
But they go one step further, like, nah, why don't we just have them chase them like on motorcycles, and they're chasing they're on like a fire truck or something. Like,
and Steve Buscemi's off gambling at the Ritz or whatever.
Yeah, having a drink with a cocktail, like having a cocktail with a little umbrella in it. Like what if we did that too? They're like, okay, yeah, let's do that too. So who knows? On another day, I might flip Air Force One and Con Air. But as of now, I think the experience of watching Con Air was just like, it was fun, I guess. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that's my ranking of Airpool. But I would agree. I think overall, a success. I think so. Yeah, I had a fun time. I mean, it's 90s action movies. You're going to have a fun time. But as we descend into our summer film promotion, it looks like we're going back in time, guys. I don't know if we're having another like one of those slingshot around the sun bits or, like from Star Trek IV again. I don't know what's happening, but we're going. It looks like we're going to the year 1982.
Is that a Rubik's Cube?
I don't know. Is that a Rubik's Cube? Is that Tron that I see before me?
Is that Tron?
I see a Rocky III pinball machine. What's that all about? And oh, wow. It looks like I think I see our final Friday the 13th episode.
Oh, no. Abort.
When we come back for our summer-long promotion, it'll be the summer of 82. Where were you in 82? I'll tell you where we are. God, I should have written this beforehand. This is terrible. Where were you in 82? Well, I'll tell you where we were. We were watching the... Oh my God! I pulled my ripcord as I was in the middle of that. I'm like, no, I'm just gonna abandon that. When we come back, we're talking about the summer movies of 1982. There you go.
Yeah,
folks.
We're talking about movies that came out in 1982.
Yeah, what I don't know what to tell you.
Leave it in. Leave all that in.
Anyway, I gotta go. Looks like someone's stealing my Mercedes, my priceless American car that I don't make anymore. I gotta go check that out.
Time to take out the trash.
Gorgeous, but cheap.
Right. What's that?
Your new student, she's stingy. I offered to take her a jump. Special introductory price, $59.95. She played me like a video game. Maybe you could talk her into it.
I got something else in mind. It's 12:30 now.
Uh-huh.
We do the jump. Grab a Coke afterwards, talk about our bonding experience on the way down. Leave her a message around 5:30.
Hey, what's up? It's me, Ditch.
Right, dinner.
Yada, yada, yada.
Her place. Kick the stuffed animals off the bed by 9:45. I'm home by 11:30.
In time to watch Lynn.
Yep. What do you think?
I say go for it.
I'm all over it.